Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thanks for listening to the podcast from the Early Morning Late Show. Hello and good morning. It's 4 minutes after the hour. I have Bill English in studio already, so we're going to keep this break short and get right to the business at hand. And as the college graduates are getting their degrees and starting off their new professional career, what's the job market looking like? Are you finding opportunities? I think the job market is kind of strong right now, but maybe you've got debt. Maybe you're worried about making the most amount of money. But maybe the big question you should be asking is, what does God want you to do? And that might be not as conventional as you think. So what you don't want to do is end up like this poor guy in New York, these poor parents of this guy in New York. They're kicking their 30-year-old son out of the basement, and they had to go to court to get it done. And the court has favored the parents, and I guess he's suing now. So how lovely. I mean, I can't wait to think how pleasant Thanksgiving will be. Everyone seems to want to talk.
The son is suing the parents for suing him to get out of the house?
Yes, yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's going to be a fantastic story, but it's gotten a lot of attention because Junior won't leave the basement, and so the parents said, you need to get out, and they finally got the court involved to get him out. Now he's suing back to the parents. I don't know. Seems like this is something you'd want to do.
Couldn't they just change the lock on the screen door and be done with it?
I would think that might be one thing. You know?
You did say it's in New York where the rent prices are crazy
high. That's true.
So maybe I have a little more sympathy, but seriously, yeah. If your parents have to sue you to get out of their basement, that's a wake-up call.
Well, Junior said, said that they did not give him a proper six-month written notice to evacuate. So come on, let's give him a break. He's got a point there.
Life is hard.
He's 30.
I wonder if that's some kind of landlord law.
I don't know.
In New York, you got to give a six-month notice.
Yeah. Well, he found a loophole, so I got to give him credit for that.
Is he in law school?
No, he's not. Okay. He's not. So anyway, when we come back, we're going to talk about the job market. We're going to talk about doing what God wants you to do. That's important. As the college graduates today are now facing the job market, Bill English from BibleandBusiness.com is in studio. We'll be right back with that conversation in just a minute. Minutes after the hour, that music belongs to Bill English from BibleandBusiness.com. So as the college seniors are graduating, getting their degrees, what's the job market like? I know the job market's a little bit better than usual, not as good as before the recession, but less than 4% of recent grads are unemployed. So that's a good thing.
That is a good thing. Yeah. This comes to us from the Wall Street or via the Wall Street Journal from a paper that the New York Federal Reserve published recently. And what they're saying is that the job market is about as good as it's been since the recession for graduating seniors out of college, but it's not as good as what it was before the recession. So they're saying that only 4% of the recent grads are going to be unemployed. But here's the kicker. 42%, almost half of the college graduates who are going to graduate this year are going to take jobs that pay over $45,000 a year that don't require a college degree.
Mm-hmm.
Now, think that through. So they went to college 4 years, paid all that money, and they're coming out and they're taking their first job anyways, is a job that didn't require them to go to college to begin with.
Okay, that stings a little.
That does, just
yeah,
a little.
That might suggest, though, you're not getting into the right profession, the right job, because you're not actually going to find employment that you were qualified to do.
Yeah, and it may be that your education puts you into a niche that is full and that you're not able to get employment in, so you find employment somewhere else while you bide your time waiting to get into the niche industry or vertical that you really want to be in.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's interesting.
Is there any wisdom, Bill, with getting out of college and I don't know, or maybe getting out of high school if you're graduating even high school and working for a couple of years before you go to college?
I think there's a lot of wisdom in doing some gap years before you go to college. Mm-hmm. It just seems to me that...
I did gap years in college.
Should I ask about that, or should we let that go?
You can if we get really hung up for things to talk about.
Okay. No, I like the idea of gap years. Now, look, I'm a big believer in that now. My son, David, has done two gap years with YWAM. He did a discipleship training school where he went to Belize for 3 months for discipleship training, then 2 months in Paraguay for mission work, and now he's finishing up 9 months called School of the Bible out in Montana, where they just study the Bible for 9 months. And then he's going to go to college. So I think, you know, gap years are worth it. If you're going to work, you know, my thought is, shoot, go be a truck driver. I mean, mm-hmm. they're making 80 grand a year right now. Come out of high school, go be a truck driver, drive semis for a few years, make some money, and then go to college, and you don't have to take out any loans. Just save your money and pay cash for college.
Mm-hmm.
So, but getting out and doing some work, I think, is really helpful. What they'll tell you in MBA programs is that they would prefer to have people in their mid-30s to mid-40s, maybe even into their 50s, people who have some industry knowledge and experience who will get more out of the program because of their life experiences. I don't know why that doesn't apply to undergraduate, too. So, mm-hmm. yeah, I like the idea of gap years.
Yeah, I don't want to be a wet blanket here, Bill, but if you've just graduated from college, what majors would be most likely to maybe be underemployed?
Believe it or not, criminal justice, this is according to the New York Fed, criminal justice, public policy and law, and the performing arts.
Yeah, well,
you know?
Yeah,
and
I think...
That's you, right? You're performing arts.
I've been performing arts for a long, long time, and I think the numbers are, I think, 15% or less in the performing arts make over $30,000 a year.
Oh, good heavens.
So 85% make less than that.
You know, it's interesting. My daughter was in center stage at Maple Grove, and there was a kid on there who was an incredible actor. He just had the talent, you mm-hmm. know. And I went up to him after the show, and I said, "Boy, you've got some real talent. I hope you develop this in college." And he goes, "Yeah, that's what I'm going to go to college for." Hearing you say that now, I wonder, what's he going to do when he gets out if he's part of the 85% that doesn't get employed in the theater?
Yeah, because talent's not always the biggest part of the equation.
Oh, really?
No. There's a lot of, it's a difficult way to make a living, for sure.
Well, I would think so. I would think music and entertainment would be very, very difficult areas.
You have to ask yourself, what compromises are you willing to make when compromises are, you know, you're confronted with them? What it is about scripts that you're going to look at and things they're going to ask you to say and do, are you willing to say and do them?
As a Christian. Right.
And my answer is no.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're willing to sacrifice part of your career in order to maintain your Christian faith, which I would expect.
Right. All right. So.
But the areas where you will most likely be employed coming right out of college is nursing, education, and engineering.
Mm-hmm.
So those three are in high demand right now.
That seems like a nursing degree is really a great, great pathway to full-time employment all the time.
I tell you what, right now we're turning around a healthcare company, mm-hmm. and we need at least another 60 or 70 nurses on staff.
Wow.
We would hire them today if we had that.
Listen up.
We are recruiting everywhere we can to find nurses, and it's hard. It's hard to find nurses because there's a nursing shortage in the United States. Just like there's a truck driver shortage, there's a nursing shortage.
Is there a truck driver shortage right now?
There is.
Okay.
Almost 60,000 truck drivers short based on the Washington Post article.
Wow. And that job pays well.
It does.
But you got to drive a truck. And
you got to do something.
I mean, that's not easy driving a truck.
Actually, it's not.
No, it's not at all.
There is more to driving a truck than what you think.
I can hardly back my little car up into certain places. I see these guys backing up these semis. I'm going, that's amazing.
But you know what? Those long trailers are much easier to back up than the short, light trailers. Just
really?
Having had different size trailers, I can tell you the longer, the bigger, the easier they are to back up.
Okay. Let's take a little break because when we come back, I want to continue our conversation with Bill English from BibleandBusiness.com. It's 15 minutes after the hour. I'll be right back. Thank you. 17 minutes after the hour. Welcome back to the show. Bill English is here with me in studio from BibleandBusiness.com. We're talking about graduates and the job market. And more importantly, we're talking about wherever you are in life. And I've talked to friends who are sort of at that phase, Bill, where they're going, what does God want me to do next?
And we do that throughout life, don't we?
Oh, yeah.
We don't just do that when we're 19 or 20.
You can feel as confused at 57 as you do at 19.
And I am as confused at 57 as I was at 19. No, seriously. God is going to call us, and this is part of it, God is going to call us from time to time throughout our lives to risk in order to do significant ministry. Mm-hmm. You never do significant ministry without significant risk. Mm-hmm. And so what does God want me to do? Part of that question is, what does God want me to risk? And that's something that that I think a lot of people don't understand. Going to college, is that for everybody? Probably not. The trades are really hurting. Mm-hmm. Carpenters, plumbers, concrete workers, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
All the trades are hurting, and that's why their wages are going up. Mm-hmm. And that's why carpenters and plumbers and electricians can charge more and more and more, because there just isn't enough of them to go around to meet the demand.
Yeah, I'm trying to get carpeting in my basement, and they said 6 weeks out for an installer.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not surprised.
Yeah.
Because who wants to install carpet?
Well, it seems like it's a great job, and you know, you can stay busy.
You can stay very busy. You can make a decent living. It is hard work. Mm-hmm. You're carrying heavy carpet around, and you're on your knees and hands doing mm-hmm. a lot of hard labor. Mm-hmm. But it's an honorable way to make a living.
Mm-hmm. So there are plenty of professions that are open, and you know, you talk about even airline pilots. Their wages are high, and there's a lot of people retiring right now from that industry.
There are. And part of the reason that the pilot wages are so high is because their union is so strong.
Okay.
You know, you get everybody joins the union as a pilot. And what happens is that when the union goes to Delta or to, you know, United or wherever, and they say, you know, you either give the pilots what we want or we're going to strike.
Mm-hmm.
You can't fly a plane without a pilot.
Yeah.
There are no self-flying planes yet.
So, Bill, why do people go to college? Are they pursuing truth? Are they figuring out a way to get equipped to make a lot of money? And that's what they really want more than anything. I want a good job, make a lot of money.
Well, there is truth to that, right? I mean, people who go to college and come out with a four-year degree, on average, do make more money than people who don't.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of the reality there. But as Rebecca was saying during the break, some people go to college, just it's the extended adolescence thing. They don't know what they want to do.
Mm-hmm.
So they go to college and they rack up these debts trying to figure out what they want to do with their lives, when probably they should have taken a couple gap years, maybe even three gap years, and either worked or done some ministry or done something else to round out their personhood. And I would say to challenge themselves, so that they would know, kind of get a trajectory for their life.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about how important it is to be listening to what God has us to do and what God would have us, where he would lead us. You talked about taking risk, and that sounds to a lot of people, for younger people, they're attracted to that idea. Risk is good. They're excited, aren't they? Or do they not want risk?
I think it depends on the personality.
Okay.
I think it depends on the personality. I've always been a risk taker. I'm an entrepreneur. My wife is not.
Mm-hmm.
My wife is not a risk taker at all. And so it really depends on the personality. I think some young people are attracted to the idea of taking a risk and going for it, you know, living out your dream kind of thing. And others mm-hmm. are, no, put me in the classroom. Just let me take notes and pass tests and I'll be a very happy camper.
Mm-hmm.
So it just seems to me, like I said earlier, that the significant ministry doesn't happen without significant risk. It also doesn't happen without significant training. And whether that training is college or it's on the job in the ministry type training, serving God will always stretch you.
Mm-hmm.
And God will always want to take you to a place where you're uncomfortable, precisely so that you depend on him in your vocation, your job, your ministry, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Bill, is choosing a career the same as following God's will for your life?
I think they're one and the same, but I think following God's will is tantamount. Let him choose your career,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah. I, at first, many, many, many years ago, thought I wanted to be a marriage and family counselor. I thought, I would like to do that. And then I went and applied to a graduate school, and I had this very, very sharp admissions counselor I was talking to, and I was giving him a little bit of a background as to what I was doing previous to that, previous to considering school. And he said, wait a minute, wait, you're doing what? And I told him, and he said, you might want to consider just continuing doing that, because you're going to get places I'm never going to get.
And was that stand-up comedy?
It was performing. Yeah.
Performing?
Yeah.
Acting, theater?
Yeah. Magic, comedy, the whole thing. So he said, you will actually get places I will never get. So God can use you in profound ways.
And has that happened? I am curious.
Oh,
absolutely. Has that happened?
Absolutely, yeah.
I mean, your Triple Espresso show has been seen all over the nation.
It's been in 80 cities and six countries.
Six countries?
Yep.
Yeah.
Translated into three different languages.
Isn't that something?
Yeah, it's been a blast. And it's opened doors that would have never have happened if I was sitting in an office as a marriage and family counselor.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. Again, significant ministry requires significant risk, significant training. The third thing I would say there is significant funding, but God always funds what he calls.
Mm-hmm.
He always funds that which he calls.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about when people say, well, I don't know what God's will for my life is.
Oh.
No, I mean, I'm not making fun of that at all, because that's a big deal. But I do think that people sit around expecting God's will to come out of the sky like hit like lightning, and it's not. I mean, isn't our will to God's will for us is to be obedient to him?
It is, but before that, I think this is where we're such Americans. God's will ultimately is for us to know him and to love him.
Mm-hmm.
First and foremost, it's about the relationship. Out of the relationship comes the direction for vocation or ministry or whatever it is. What are you going to do with yourself? We are so programmed into thinking that our worth is in our doing rather than understanding that the quality of our relationship with God is not about what we do for him. It is simply about being with him.
Mm-hmm.
This is the whole point of Sky Jathani's book. It's called With.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I read that book, and it was terribly convicting. It goes along with another book by R.T. Kendall called The Sensitivity of the Spirit. And in those two books, they talk about how being with God is such a delicate and yet very strong thing. But once you can develop that and live that, the doing just comes naturally. You'll mm-hmm. you'll just know what to do because you'll hear his voice, and you'll be ready to be obedient and to follow him.
Mm-hmm. And Bill, what's the best way to sort of be realistic about your gifts and talents that God's given?
I think you talk to people, take some tests.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's nothing wrong with that. I did that when I was considering going out of being a psychologist and going into what turned out to be technical training and then owning a training business.
Mm-hmm.
I went down the hall to a psychologist who did this vocational training, and I said, Martha, why don't you do your voodoo on me, because I'm not sure I should be a therapist moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
And she did, and we found out, you're built for public speaking and for teaching and for writing. That's what you should do.
Cool.
And so it really helped me.
Yeah, because a lot of times people, they don't know where they should be going, what direction they should be going, because they haven't fully understood their gifts.
Well,
pray that God reveals to you exactly what your gifts are and how well you can do for the kingdom.
Think about what you enjoy. What do you really enjoy doing? What really trips your trigger, brings you happiness?
Yeah. What's purposeful in life, right? I mean, I it's great to be happy, and I think being happy is great, but what about being purposeful?
But I think your happiness will be tied to the purpose.
Okay.
I don't see those as mutually exclusive.
Yeah, because I think C.S. Lewis says you find happiness in your peripheral vision. When you're doing something and you're purposeful and doing something meaningful, you kind of glance off to either side and go, wow, I'm really happy right now.
Yeah. And God will lead you in the areas that he's gifted you, given you talents for, and given you the desires for. So really, the first thing about understanding God's will is simply to draw close to him.
Yep. And when in doubt, just quote C.S. Lewis. We'll take a break and be back with more. Thanks to Bill English from BibleandBusiness.com. It is 26 and a half minutes after the hour. Everyone, minutes after the hour, we're going to take a break for news, but there's lots more to come that's going to be very interesting. You know, our friend and pastor Adam Weber from Sweet Falls We're going to talk to him and also about his book, Talking with God, What to Say When You Don't Know How to Pray. That's all up next in about 6 minutes.
I'm in love and it's a sunny day.
If you're raising a teenager, then here's the first thing you can take to the bank. Teenagers will act like teenagers during their teenage years. Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. Your kids will make mistakes. They'll lie, they'll mistreat people, they'll stumble. But just because they mess up from time to time doesn't mean we bail them out of their consequences. The second thing you can count on is this. What you've taught your kids is paramount. The seeds you've sown in their lives will one day come to fruition. And third, Mom and Dad, you need to trust God's involvement in your kids' life. He wants good things for your teen, and He'll never abandon you or your kids. Take those three things to the bank and cash them in. Someday, your teen will thank you.
Check out new resources available for parents coming soon to ParentingTodaysTeens.org.
Minutes until the top of the hour. If you're getting your day started and you need a little piece of assurance, Psalm 56:3 says, "When I'm afraid, I put my trust in you." So if you're feeling that this morning, just know that God's got your He's got you in the palm of His hand. All right. Next up, Adam Sandler. Oh wait, no, Adam Weber. There's a big difference. But almost just as funny as Adam Sandler is Adam Weber, pastor of Embrace Church in Sioux Falls. Good morning, Adam.
Oh, good morning. Always a joy to be on.
Thank you.
Fantastic. It's a beautiful day here in Sioux Falls. I hope the same is true on your
end. It's spectacular here. So if you're if you're driving to an appointment right now and you're afraid and nervous, Psalm 56 says, "When I'm afraid, I put my trust in you." How do we kind of reduce our anxiety when we have one of those days where we're going, "Ooh, I've got this critical meeting or appointment or something that just makes me afraid"?
Honestly, even as you read that verse, it was something that spoke to me right now where I'm at.
Yeah, cool.
And I think the biggest thing is not trying to carry whatever we're facing, the trial, the burden, the struggle on our own. Instead, just declare it and give it to God specifically. Get really specific. God, this meeting I'm struggling with, or even like the advertisement was talking about just a little bit ago about teenagers and worry about your teenagers. Lord, I give you my teenage son who's struggling. I give you this specific thing. And so I hand that over to you, and then I hold on to this psalm that you just read. I hold on to this truth, this promise. And God, you're a father who can be trusted. And how I know that is the track record in my life.
Mm-hmm. Because when I read that psalm, Adam, and it says, "When I am afraid." So it sounds like being afraid is going to be a condition we're going to confront and we're going to have to deal with.
Yeah. Oh. And one of the things I love about when it comes to being afraid is Jesus and also different angels, like when the angel comes to Mary, the first thing they do is they reassure.
I know.
Don't be afraid.
I know, isn't that beautiful?
There's no need to be afraid.
Yeah.
I'm like, he's speaking to a Yahoo just like me who needs to hear that, who's quick to not trust and quick to be afraid. And
yeah.
So I'm so grateful that God, so often one of the first things, there's no need to be afraid. I'm with you.
Yeah. There's so much division in this world, and there's so many things that cause turmoil. And I always want to say, can we look for beauty in life? Can we find moments where we find beauty and wonder? That's my complete thought.
Yeah, no, whether it's beauty or wonder, or just seeing the goodness of God in spite of what might be on the surface. Just looking at a trial and, man, this is doomsday and the world's
right.
coming in and everything.
Right.
And yet, God, will you give me eyes to see what's unseen? Because I've heard that's eternal.
I love it.
And so would you just get and help me to see past the surface of my trial, my situation, what the world's going through? Help me see past the surface to your greater plan. And that might not always be crystal clear in our lives or in the big picture in the world as a whole. And yet God is ultimately in control of all things.
Yeah. Adam, what's happening at Embrace, your church? And I know you've got several campuses, but talk about what's going on.
yeah, we're in the season of just seeing life change just on a wonderful level. And it's crazy. We've been around now coming up this fall. It's 12 years. And so I think for any church or pastor or Christian that attends a church, oftentimes you want to see God move right away.
Mm-hmm.
But for us, it's been something that's taken years really to begin to see God move in just such a powerful way. And so this last weekend, we had Baptism Sunday across our campuses.
Mm-hmm.
It was amazing. It was just amazing seeing people. The age spectrum was, you know, everything from a middle schooler to, I believe, a 7-year-old lady who stepped forward.
Wow.
Just so powerful seeing mm-hmm. people want to publicly declare the change that God has had in their life. And so we're seeing that even in my own small group. We're mm-hmm. going through the Alpha course, which kind of lays out the foundations of the faith.
Mm-hmm.
And just the conversation and life change that's been taking place is wonderful. It's an amazing thing when you know, especially as the pastor, I know it's nothing we're doing. You just kind of sit back in awe and just watch God move and him do his thing. It's awesome.
Yeah. Adam, talk about that expression, God moving in a powerful way. I think as guys like you and me who have been followers for a long time, I think we get that right away. But what about if I'm newer yeah. to the faith and I hear that expression, God moves in a powerful way? How am I supposed to recognize or identify that if I'm kind of a new believer?
Yeah, well, there's I think, different things, honestly, that the church often looks at, like, wow, that church is growing really fast, and, man, that was a powerful Sunday, and those things are neat.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, when I talk about God moving in a powerful way, there's a gal in my small group right now who I cannot believe that she's a follower of Jesus. It's one of those people where you're like, no way. And she'd say the same thing. If she was listening right now, she'd be smiling and saying amen. So it's just when you see God get a hold of someone's life, and for her, she's not going through a low season in her life. She didn't have a trial that she walked through. Instead, she was just kind of coasting through life, and Jesus met her and just changed her from the inside out.
Mm-hmm.
So even last night, our small group got together, and she's just asking about what next steps she can take. And that, for me, is God moving in a powerful way. That person that you thought God could never change, or that situation that you thought was an end point, and then you see God totally turn things upside down. That's for me when I'm like, that's God, because we couldn't create that.
Mm-hmm. When we talk about the transforming and the renewing of our minds, are we more likely to see that in others versus be aware of it in ourselves?
Oh, great question. I think absolutely.
It's easier to see it in others, isn't it? And go, oh, that guy
totally,
was really changed.
Yeah, it's no question. And even in the last day, I've met with two different people, and I pointed out the change in one man's life. I said, Mike, I've seen so much change in you. And he kind of was like, I don't really know. And yeah, maybe I stopped doing a couple things and this. And I said, no, you haven't just stopped doing a couple of things. Just you, your kindness and your compassion and love for others is drastically different. And he began to get emotional because I think he was unsure, like, God, is God working in my life? And just sometimes you just need someone else to point it out in you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, wow, that really is different. That really is a change. When I first came to Christ, there was a classmate of mine who wasn't a Christian, didn't come from a Christian home. And I'll never forget it. We were riding together, and I knew God was doing something in my life. But here was this friend who didn't know anything about me going to youth group or whatever. And we were driving, and he stopped. But he just kind of stopped the conversation as we were driving and just said, Adam, I can't put my finger on it, but you just seem like a completely different person than the best way possible.
Yeah.
And I was so shocked. I said, what do you mean? Like, even then, I still didn't understand. He's like, I just don't know, but there's just something really different about you. And for it, then all of a sudden, kind of God's just like, hey, knucklehead, you're talking about me and what I've done in your life. So, yeah, it was a powerful moment to have someone else call it out in me.
Yeah. I love a pastor who refers to himself as a yokel and a knucklehead in the same interview.
That's right.
Adam, let me take a break. When we come back, I want to talk about the comparison game. We all deal with that. So we'll be back in a minute with Adam Weber. If you don't have your watch handy with you, it's 12 minutes until the top of the hour, so keep moving. My guest is Adam Weber. His book, Talking with God, What to Say When You Don't Know How to Pray. Basically, life is crazy, but prayer is simple. And Adam, I think we all have the comparison game that we play. We present an imposter to the world at times because we want to be looked at favorably because we compare sometimes our insides to other people's outsides, and that makes us uncomfortable. Talk about putting on that mask that we need to take off.
Yeah, when it comes to comparison, I think Jesus once said, wherever two or more gather, the comparison game takes place. I think that was my translation. But seriously, as human beings, kids, you see it in kids playing the comparison game, but even worse, you see it in adults. So we're constantly comparing every aspect of our life. I mean, if you start looking at everything like around me right now, my house, my shoes, my mm-hmm. clothes, my weight, my family, my wife, we're just constantly comparing. And oftentimes we're comparing our reality with the rise of social media to someone else's highlight reel.
Sure. Right.
And so I think it's kind of a lose-lose for everybody all the way around. And with comparison in general, the worst part about it, there's a whole bunch of things that are not great about it, but the worst part about it for ourselves is the fact that it steals our joy.
Mm-hmm.
It steals our joy. It steals our peace. It steals our gratefulness, our thankfulness. It just kind of has a way of taking out all that God has put within us.
Mm-hmm. What are some things we can do to combat some of those feelings that we have about the comparison game?
Yeah, I think there's this is definitely not the end all, but I think the biggest first step is just to stop looking around. I think oftentimes we put ourselves in places where we're just searching for what other people have, whether it's scrolling through Facebook, whether it's just having our head up, constantly scanning the room for what everybody else has and what everybody else is doing, even for people's plans. Like, did you hear so-and-so got together and they didn't invite us and this and that? So I think stop looking around at what everyone else has. And instead of doing that, start looking at what you already have.
Mm-hmm.
Stop looking at what everyone else has and start looking at what you have. And just begin to look at all the blessings in your life, the things that you prayed for that God provided that now you take for granted.
Mm-hmm.
The places that you are in life, your kids are in life, that people only wish they were at that same place. Stop looking around and start looking at what God has already given you. I think it's a first good step. And then the second step for me is always just being thankful, just being quick to give thanks. When you play the comparison game, you're quick to criticize. You're quick to be jealous. You're quick to say things that you're like, man, where did this ugly thing come from? But when you give thanks, when you're thankful, it has a way of cleaning your heart. One of the things all throughout the Bible is just the command, give thanks, give thanks, give thanks. Give thanks in every situation. Give thanks even in the midst of the trials. Just when we give thanks consistently and have a thankful heart, it takes the comparison game out of our heart. It takes the jealousy, the envy, the bitterness, resentment right out from within us. And then the last step, and maybe this should be the first step, is just to focus on Jesus. To focus on Him and who He is and what He's done in your life, which is so much bigger than any house. It's so much better than any clothes or car or sales numbers that you can reach. When we keep our eyes focused on Him and who He is and what He's done for our life, it changes everything. It changes everything. And we no longer find ourselves playing this comparison game. Instead, we feel like we can't give thanks to God enough.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes, Adam, God is always worthy of our praise all the time. And I sometimes, when I have a day that has a lot of challenges in it, I will start by praising God by saying, you know, despite these circumstances, and I'll even sometimes say them out loud, despite this, yep, I am going to praise you because you are to be praised. And when I start doing that, I promise that some of these issues start to fade into the background a little bit.
Oh, they do. And one time I heard someone, because I was talking about worshiping, just not even on a Sunday, and just singing out no matter what you're facing. And a person said, isn't that being fake, though? And I said, well, it could be fake if you're saying all these different things that, you know, you're like, God, life has never been better and everything's perfect. That would be fake.
Yeah.
But instead, if you just, instead of that, if you just said, well, actually, it's not a choice of feelings. God has commanded me to praise him regardless of how I feel. Then it's not fake, because you're able to say, God, I don't understand, but I praise you. I have so many doubts, and I'm really struggling today, but I still lift your name high.
Mm-hmm.
I still declare that you are the author of life. I still declare that you are all-powerful, you are good, and you love to provide for me. I don't understand, but I still praise you.
Yeah.
And just as you said, in those moments, it's amazing what God can begin to do within our hearts when we're just faithful to praise him, even if we don't feel like it.
Yeah. Adam, if we're hardwired for worship and adoration, then whatever circumstances we have in our life, that's not going to be the main thing. Christ is going to be the main thing.
Yes. No question. You said it perfectly.
Oh, good. Good. So I think it's a good reminder, and I'm speaking for myself this morning, because there's plenty of circumstances right now in life that are really challenging. And if I focus on those, which is easy to do because my mind will always default to what seems to be problematic, but I have to be reminding myself gratitude and worship and adoration, because that seems to melt away a lot of the circumstances in life, or it puts them in a perspective. And that's what I need more than anything. God says, I'll never leave you or forsake you. And let's just kind of celebrate that together.
I'm not sure what you're walking through, but I'm actually at a very, very similar place myself this morning.
Okay.
And I honestly, today my challenge when I got out of bed was, Lord, I'm going to worship you today. regardless of what I'm walking through, regardless of this trial, regardless of this hardship, I'm going to worship you today because you're so worthy, and because I know that you've always provided for me, even in times when I questioned and even times I didn't understand why you provided the way you did.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to praise you.
Yeah.
And on these days, especially if anybody's listening is facing the same thing, I just encourage us maybe right now to get on our knees and just kind of declare, like, Jesus, you are the Lord of my life.
Mm.
And I know that for some of us, we declared that 20 years ago at a Billy Graham conference, but even maybe today we still need to get on our knees, because
mm-hmm.
there's been a part of us that has kind of retaken the reins of our life.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe today we just need to get on our knees and just say, Jesus, you're in control. You are Lord. I'm not a good Lord of my life. And so you're in control, and I'm going to trust you, and I'm going to worship you right now. Maybe it's opening up the Psalms and just even the Psalm you read earlier, writing that on a note card today and
mm-hmm.
carrying it with us this week and just reciting it to us when we have anxiety coming up or lack of trust or just worry, just bringing that Bible verse out again and reading it to ourselves.
Yeah. So my prayer for you, Adam, is that whatever uncertainty that you're dealing with today in life, that will not distract you from giving God worship, praise, and adoration.
Oh, I'm grateful for that.
Yeah, yeah. You're a friend, and I just love having you on the show, and thank you for your transparency and vulnerability, and you called yourself a Yahoo, not a yokel, so a Yahoo and a knucklehead.
Both apply.
Coming
both
from
both
a pastor within 10 minutes. That's fantastic. Adam, have a great day. Look forward to our next conversation.
Yep, you do the same.
You bet.
Thanks for all you do.
You bet. 3 minutes till the top of the hour. We'll wrap up the show in just a minute. Thanks to Adam Weber for coming on the show today. Always a treat to talk to him. And his book is Talking to God. And it's a great book. I've gone through it, and it's a great reminder. So go talk to God. Have a great day. I'll see you tomorrow. Thanks for listening to the Early Morning Late Show podcast. These conversations are available because of your prayerful and financial support. Make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the Early Morning Late Show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and grow the impact of the Early Morning Late Show.